If you are given the opportunity to travel around a country, speak to fascinating people in unique places, and learn their big ideas, would you take it? I'm Sean Thomas, and that's exactly what we get to do with this program here on Inland Visions in Russia. We are in St. Petersburg, the capital of Russian ballet. Preserving the classic art and throwing modern into the mix, the city continues to define the global dance culture today. So what does it take to become a top-notch dancer? We'll ask ballet star and head of one of the top dance schools in the world, Nikolai Tsiskaridze. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. It's truly an honor to be here. It's been an incredible experience. I have to ask, can you train anyone, even if they don't have the initial skills and talent, through training and hard work, can they become a star? Can you train anything?
Never. Never. Never.
Well, you see... It's true that, well, each person has certain talents, naturally. There's the term talent. Well, it denotes special abilities that only one person in a billion may have, and we can't really describe what it is. It's when you find it interesting to watch someone, however unskillful they may seem, and you don't want to watch anyone else. Some people, they grab your attention, while others can't, even if they're doing the same thing. No amount of hard work can produce talent, and it can only help you master a ballet movement. If you have short arms, you have them for life. Unfortunately, if you're born with a short neck or legs, you can't remedy that. That's how you were born. But it will prevent you from fulfilling your potential in classical ballet. That's why the Russian Ballet Theatre is famous. That's why it's the best of the best. It can still offer a beautiful picture, so to speak. And that's what the audience has always been after. Ballet is about beauty.
About today's youth who are getting ready to go into ballet, I've heard that students now don't have as much coordination as they used to because they're always on their phones or looking at their iPads, and they're not being as active as they used to. Is this true?
Unfortunately, it's true. It's absolutely true. And what are the consequences? Our generation used to play mainly street games. Of course, we played different games depending on the country. Some played cops and robbers or cowboys and Indians. Some of us played lapta, a Russian bat and ball game, or hopscotch, or say elastics, a game that was very popular in the Soviet Union. So we played all these games, and what did all that mean? It meant we not only ran around a lot, we also had to watch other players. And then you had to memorize the pattern of the game, make sure you did it right, and watch for your opponent's mistakes. And there were several levels of that, the rubber band game. But now, when a kid is glued to his tablet, he doesn't move or watch others move. In fact, the only thing that gets trained is his visual memory. No other skills are engaged, and this is immediately noticeable, especially when children come to classical ballet. They're unable to quickly memorize a series of ballet pas in class, something we used to do easily. I can't understand that. Not once did I have a problem memorizing a succession of ballet steps. I never got stuck or messed up the combination. But these kids, who are staring at screens all the time, find it difficult. And it's a global problem. Their minds work in a different way. If the global community doesn't take measures soon, I dare say all this is going to end in disaster. The result will be really bad.
Something that you have already mentioned, but I want to go a little bit deeper, is finding talent. Can you spot talent at a very young age? And if so, how do you do it?
You can see at once if a kid has a talent for ballet. But unfortunately, everything is decided in puberty. When hormones kick in and male and female bodies develop, everything can change in that moment. And you can't predict what turn the kid will take in his adolescent development, how the genes they inherit will work. We've tried to predict the outcome, but it's impossible. However, some kids grab your attention as soon as they start moving and dancing.
There's so much history in this room right now. Can you tell me what some of this stuff is? For example, tell me about this costume, maybe.
This section is fully dedicated to Diaghilev's Russian Seasons. Here you can see original posters from 1909 and 1911. This is an original Serov poster, and that one is by Jean Cocteau. Everything here is related to the seasons. There's a ballet called La Diable. No one has ever performed it except Nijinsky and me. We revived the ballet for the 100th anniversary of the seasons and showed it in London, Paris, and of course Moscow, St. Petersburg, and in the east of Russia as well. It's very difficult to dance this part, because this costume has a 66-centimeter waist. It was hard to squeeze into. What was funny, when we were looking for a mannequin for this costume, we realized nobody produced mannequins for that size. Wherever we called, and it was still possible to ship from anywhere back then, they told us there were no men of that height with that waistline. Otherwise, it wouldn't have fit. And when this guy arrived, it was the slimmest model they had. We still had to cut away some material to fasten the costume. When I see it, I know I should watch my diet more.
Comparing ballet dancers from 100 years ago until now, there have been many, many, many changes. Ballet has evolved over the years. But now there's stereotypes of what a ballet dancer must be. They must be incredibly skinny, maybe even frail-looking, but also incredibly strong as well. Are the conditions to become a ballet dancer becoming more harsh as time goes on?
There were two wonderful small-format books, this big. You could buy at practically any bookstore around the globe. They were about the beauty of male and female bodies. There were 100 photos, one for each year of the past century, each reflecting the beauty standards of a particular year. And flicking through them, you could see how male and female body types evolved over the 20th century. Of course, those beauty standards influenced ballet aesthetics too. At the start of the century, the performers and dancers had short legs and short arms. Men didn't dance at the back then. In the 1920s and 30s, Anna Pavlova appeared on stage bringing in a fashion for delicate, long-limbed females. Then came regime change in the Russian Empire, and avant-garde art flooded into the country. It brought circus to the ballet stage, with lots of challenging feats, overhead lifts with women dancers thrown up in the air and lifted high above the head. Men started performing huge, complicated jumps, all sorts of somersaults, something ballet had never seen until then. It's unfortunate that nationality and origin do play a major role in a ballet dancer's professional prospects. It's the same for opera. It's known that certain climatic zones produce opera singers with high-pitched voices, so that's how it all happened. And now we have what we have.
Так произошло, потому теперь вот так в мире.
Ким Ин Ким is one of the great dancers of today. Coming from Korea, he chose to dance here at the Mariinsky Theater. Ким Ин Ким, thank you for taking the time to meet us today. So I have to ask, why Russia?
Because I like it. I was trained in Korea, my home country. I was invited to dance for Mariinsky Theater when I was 18, and it's been great since then. Russia is my second home. I love the city, love the theaters, love the people.
You have said that great technique itself doesn't make a great ballet dancer. How difficult is it to express emotion through dance? What is that extra mile, if you will? What makes a good dancer?
Ballet is an art form, after all. It's not about being able to execute this or that move. It's about successfully conveying an image, a message, or a certain emotion to your audience. This is what matters most. That's why I love Russian ballet, because there's a difference between the Mariinsky company and other companies. What we care about is not just showing the technique, but telling a story.
What can we expect of ballet dancers of the future? Or maybe a better way of saying it is, what would you like to see or create for ballet dancers of the future?
You know, something very strange is happening today. Because the global trend of leveling everything, ironing out our differences, that makes it really hard to explain to the audience that there is a white and black swan, and they're not the same. The authors of Swan Lake used white and black to contrast good and evil, but now you can't even depict it that way. And now you have to allow anyone to dance in these roles, and so on and so forth. This has distorted the original meaning, the message of ballet performance. The tragedy of modern theater over the past 20 years has been that most ballet companies in the world are run by people who have never danced themselves, have never been a superstar. And they've set the bar really low. The situation we're in is disastrous. Every time I see a ballet performance in some part of the world, I realize that it's not the ballet I once fell in love with. This is not what inspired me to make ballet my profession. If there are no changes to theater management in the near future, I'm afraid this art will disappear as such, or rather, not disappear, but lapse into what it used to be in Europe at the turn of the 20th century.
Given the troubles that you've just explained, is it possible to invent something new in ballet?
Look, it's all very simple. You like steak, don't you? Can we just invent a new one? Your classic steak will be made the way it was made 400 years ago, or 1,000 years ago, right? Because there's nothing new to invent there. The same is with classical ballet. It was conceived that way, and the Russian theater made it that way. It can't be any other way. It's a different story that the 20th century saw the emergence of neoclassical and modern ballet, and a lot of very talented people who staged really amazing performances in England, France, America, Germany, you name it. But I think that a tutu-wearing girl impersonating a swan, and doing it well, will always be worth more than all of that new ballet stuff.
And yet, ballet is not what it was 100 years ago. There are new choreographers entering the scene, experimenting with new forms and bringing their vision to the classical stage. Konstantin Kekel is a prize-winning choreographer who has taken his productions to the Bolshoi and Mariinsky theaters and beyond. Konstantin, thank you very much for taking the time to meet with us today. So I have to ask, when you're inventing a new ballet, what goes through your mind? What's the most important thing that you think of when creating a new work?
We don't care much for things that are too straightforward. We experiment with more abstract stories that immerse the audience in a state of meditation. So going back to your question, the most important thing for us when creating a new work is getting into this meditative state and inviting viewers to join us.
You've also said in the past that a dancer is kind of a co-author of a new work or a new piece.
Yes.
Does that mean there's improvisation, or how does that work?
These are elements that could be added during rehearsals. Say we introduce a pattern or a certain limitation. Like, for example, you dance, but you're not allowed to touch each other while telling a love story. Or something along these lines. Sometimes we introduce segments that are open to improvisation during the performance itself. So there are structured segments, and then there are those that are up to the dancer. Naturally, they keep in mind the overarching idea of the show, but they can use these improvisational segments to tap into new emotional resources and explore new choreographic vocabulary so that each performance is somewhat different.
Classical ballet, there's a lot of stereotypes of being very rigid rules, and you have to follow the choreography exactly. It's incredibly strict. But contemporary modern ballet, are there any rules at all? I mean, you just talked about this idea of improvisation. What are the rules and the differences there?
There are certainly rules in modern dance as well, but it's more about working with your body and your mind, working with your presence, if you will. There are certain principles of working with weight, of working with your partner, of working with the floor, something that classical dance doesn't have. There are principles of working with the text. As you know, modern dance shows may include parts where performers talk or provoke the audience, etc. When faced with modern choreography, classical ballet dancers begin to reinterpret it as well. It becomes more interesting. They add amplitude, volume, and depth.
I think that classical art should remain classical. I have nothing against a choreographer putting on a modern interpretation of Swan Lake. For example, why not? It could be interesting. We don't live in the past, after all. We live right now. But you need to indicate clearly, this is a different choreographer's version. But if you say it's a ballet by Marius Petipa, you need to stick to the original.
Switching gears just a little bit to the academy and the fundamentals of learning for a ballet dancer. The stereotype is that from morning until night, they do work at the bar and it's incredibly strict. What else do future dancers learn at the academy?
From the very beginning, this establishment has had three schools at once. A ballet school. There's a regular public school. And a music school. It's still that way today. A kid comes here at the age of 10 and graduates at 18 as a highly skilled specialist. All that was set up 285 years ago. During World War II in Italy and France, that is, countries that invented this art. Ballet stopped. Everything stopped. In this city, which spent 900 days under a blockade, nothing stopped. Not once. Here, there's a different microclimate for arts. When I think about the people here, who are starved and essentially doomed, they were still teaching ballet to children. It's impossible to believe. You see, it's an amazing thing. In Russia, ballet is more than an art. It's more than a national art. In 1956, when the Bolshoi Theatre came to London, the world went bonkers. Nobody had ever seen anything like it before. And if the Russians hadn't given it to the world, thanks to two revolutions, in 1917 and 1991, we wouldn't have it now.
So there's this idea that ballet was written and is generally for the elites, only for the elites. Over the years, many things have changed about ballet, but is ballet really for everyone?
Ballet is a form of art that was born thanks to King Louis XIV. He loved dancing so much that he made his whole royal court take up dancing. Even dramatic plays were staged with elements of dance. And this later evolved into an art that today we call ballet. For over 100 years, ballet was something very elevated. How many common people back then knew anything about the Greek gods? No one. With the emergence of mass education, something like what the Soviet Union brought about in the USSR, absolutely everybody was involved in education equally, and everybody knew the things. Some things became accessible to everyone. Why did some countries make the effort to stop translations of the Bible? Because that way people would be able to read on their own, without priests. Although everybody began to understand what was happening on the stage, it didn't mean everyone fell in love with ballet. A lot of people still say, "I don't understand anything here. I just like it." You know, it's like opera. Ballet is a very artificial form of art. We don't dance or sing like that in real life. When you go to see an opera, you know that you will be listening to a tragedy or a comedy. You enjoy a simple story with beautiful music and sound. With ballet, you embrace the beauty of movement and use your imagination. You must know a lot of people, right? How many of them have a good imagination? It's not for everyone. The more delicate a person is tuned, the more capable they are of embracing it, the more joy they get.
So classical ballet, it draws big audiences. People know what to expect. It's almost a comfort, if you will, because yes. I know people who go to the Nutcracker every single year because it is a tradition for them.
Yes.
But modern ballet, is it difficult to bring new audiences in, people who have not seen ballet or been interested in dance before? How do you do that? How do you draw new audiences in?
This is actually an interesting question. I think you should see modern dance in the broader context of modern art. Modern art has never been crowd-pleasing. People who come to see classical ballet are familiar with the libretto. They have some idea about the story. They know, say, Tchaikovsky's music, or Minkus's, or whatever it may be. So it's a comfortable environment for them that looks familiar. I think this is more of a question for the audience themselves. To what extent are they prepared to explore a new environment? For example, watch new films, visit different kinds of museums, see different performances, explore modern drama, explore modern painting. It requires effort.
For an untrained eye, a person like me, just a general viewer, what do you look for in ballet? What makes it good? I mean, I know that I can see a performance and I know that it's inspirational, but I just don't know why. What do I need to see?
Two things matter the most to me. Number one, the dancer's sincerity in telling a story about him or herself. The dancer may be following the plot line, but I want to see how this particular person fits into this plot. What kind of a person are you? Who are you as Sleeping Beauty? What's your contribution to this character? You don't copy dozens or hundreds of images created before you. Instead, you communicate on your own wavelength, your own energy, so to speak. This is the first thing I care about. Number two, again, is about losing myself in meditation, so that I don't think about the stage lights or how well the dancer's foot is pointed. I want to lose myself in the performance. When this happens, this is the magic we want to see in the theater.
From your perspective, it would be very interesting. What is the most important thing people need to know about ballet? Or another way of putting it is, what's the biggest misconception about ballet that you would like to clarify?
For me personally, the most important thing has always been making sure that people who went to see a show would encounter beauty. Maybe start them thinking, too, when they feel my energy. If Swan Lake is done well, it's much more than being just about a black and white person. It's about making a choice. Everyone makes choices with their actions. That's very important. The Nutcracker is also not just a Christmas fairy tale. Tchaikovsky meant for it to be a story about saying goodbye to childhood. Every person goes through that. Every person gets nostalgic about childhood, even if it wasn't a happy one. People often want to go back, to be younger, see grandma or mum when she was young. That's what the Nutcracker's about. Your elusive dream, your nostalgia. We've come to a critical point when something is about to happen all over the world. The economic crisis affects the arts. Managers of major festivals in Salzburg, for example, have written about it. The system is dying. It's becoming irrelevant, and they don't know what to do. They can't sell tickets. People don't want to pay so much money and watch what they have to offer. Opera, ballet, can't be like fast food. The same can be said about the theater, I'm sure. Something will be rolled back, and we'll need people to restore everything in its original form. Then everything will collapse again in 100 years or so. Ballet is beauty. I know that for a fact. I've tried to communicate that my whole life, and that's what I'm trying to teach my students.
Thank you for taking the time to speak to us. Very interesting conversation.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.